For generations, most of the women in Alice Randall's African-American family weighed more than 200 pounds. And as she wrote in an op-ed in the New York Times, like many black women, they are heavy because they want to be. Their men find it sexy. Their children cherish comfortable laps. Well, that's changed for Alice. With her daughter Caroline, she's written a new cookbook that's part family memoir and a warning. It also graphically ties black women and food and weight to a terrible history of slavery. The book is called Soul Food Love, Healthy Recipes Inspired by 100 Years of Cooking in a Black Family. And Alice Randall joins us from Vanderbilt University, where she's a writer in residence. Welcome.
It's so great to be with you today, Robin.
And Caroline Randall Williams joins us from Vanderbilt as well, even though you are both Harvard grads. Caroline, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here with you.
And tell us more about this family history and this cultural thinking. I mean, Alice, you write that when you were a young girl, you prayed for fat thighs.
Well, kitchens and farms have been very difficult spaces for black people in general and black women in particular. It's led us to a situation when one out of every four middle-aged black women has diabetes. Four out of five black women are overweight.
And Caroline, by the way, we should point out you did not have the weight problem. Your mother came to you to help change hers. But had you heard about this history about African-American women working in kitchens for others but not permitted to eat with them?
Of course. You know, I think something like 90% of black women who were employed at the turn of the 20th century were employed as either domestic servants or they worked in fields and on farms. So I was conscious of, you know, sort of the strange dynamics of kitchen culture in terms of women who cooked for other women's families but didn't get to cook for themselves because those women were the women that I come from.
Well, and Alice, this has to be one of the most powerful cookbooks ever because this history is laced throughout. You talk about something called kitchen rape. Tell us more about that.
Kitchen rape is something that hasn't been discussed enough in America and its role in the obesity epidemic. Many, many black children were conceived in rapes that domestic servants experience when working.
Yeah. Caroline, your great-grandmother, Alberta, her grandmother continued to cook and clean for a family whose son raped their daughter. Her mother, your great-grandmother's mother, went crazy after she was raped?
That is true. I mean, it's a total. And what's amazing about it is that Alberta, for all of that strife, was actually very adept in her own kitchen. And she actually used the kitchen to fight back against cultural oppression by hosting these elaborate black women's club parties from her kitchen back when upper middle class black people still weren't welcome in restaurants that white people frequented. She said, okay, I'm going to cook these beautiful meals in my home and not allow whatever is going on in the outside world to mean that me and my friends can't enjoy this food.
Or to mean that we are less than human.
Mm-hmm.
That
yeah.
She used her pots and pans to create occasional meals that underscored the humanity of the people eating and the people cooking.
Yeah. What was some of the food?
Oh, she was known for her shrimp creoles, so many different foods.
Oh, God, and layer cakes. I mean, beautiful. We're talking beautiful layer cakes that people don't even have the time, energy, or skill to prepare in their homes anymore.
But also in the Middle Passage, we have stories that are handed down of women who actually would hide sesame seeds in their hair on their person. So the point is that women were giving comfort to their children with healthy foods, including the plain baked sweet potato, the roasted fish. It's not just those layer cakes. We were not baking layer cakes in the slavery period. But all of that leads to problems with weight. And in our cookbook, we revive a lot of traditional soul foods. But on a few occasions, we translate something, such as Grandma Bonton's layer cake, into a crepe stack cake that is far healthier. Instead of cups of sugar, it has tablespoons.
Just to leap in, one of the things that's most important to us is that we're not trying to tell people to get thin. We're trying to tell people to get healthy, and bigness can be healthy. I think losing 10% of your body weight, so if you're 200 pounds, losing 20 pounds, getting down just to 180, drastically reduces your chances of getting diabetes. So we said, lose 20 pounds. You don't have to lose 100.
Well, because Alice, as you point out, and again in this essay in the New York Times, part of the reason you tell us that many black women had, you know, almost embraced size is that it was a political statement. It was political resistance.
I was fat to some degree because I wanted to be. I looked around at all the large women in my family, and I wanted to be like those women. But there is a lot of complexity. How do you feel about farms when people are lynched in rural America? How do you feel about kitchens when your family members have been raped in a kitchen? Mm. There has been a breaking with the farm and the kitchen that was reasonable. And largeness could be a transgressive act. When you are owned by someone else, your fitness was something that validated that person's worth and actually influenced their economic future.
Fit-slave.
And so there become transgressive acts of self-injury. But those become complex, and they are still self-injury. I do recall praying for large thighs. I remember there was a wonderful old soul song, "Some man somewhere is going to love you skinny legs and all." The idea of being thin not being the dominant aesthetic. And so, yes, there is that part of it. And I also go with the notion that something that 4 out of every 5 Black women is doing cannot be completely something none of us want to do. But we have to take apart that wanting and figure out what we want something new now.
Right. It's a phenomenal. I mean, I can't encourage people enough to read the history that's wrapped around the recipes. It's just fascinating. The book is called Soul Food Love. It's written by Alice Randall and her daughter, Caroline Randall Williams, who join us. And they say that something has to change about the African-American diet. So let's just talk about some of the recipes that can help people do that. I mean, chicken roasted with lemon and onion.
It was the very first home-cooked meal I made when I moved to the Mississippi Delta. And I remember, you know, I was raised in rarefied grocery stores and farmers markets. And then I moved to Mississippi and I went into the local grocery store and I saw my little roaster chicken and I grabbed a bag of onions and a bag of lemons. And I said, I can roast this chicken, which is something that I was raised to do. I'd seen done in both my grandmother and great-grandmother's home. But it was one of my absolute favorite things. And my friends request it frequently.
Well, it is not what people have traditionally eaten in the Delta. It's not fried chicken. And you call fried chicken a bad boyfriend.
It is time to kick him out. And roasted chicken is the good boyfriend that you can take home to your mama to help her, you know, open parentheses, to help her lose weight, close parentheses.
Fried chicken has not always been an African-American foodways. It is also truly associated with domestic servitude and what people had in sharecropping cabins and small places, often a quiet fire, and would make lots of roasted food and stews, because standing by the stove to fry something requires a lot of immediate attention that often people who are laboring don't have.
Well, take us through New School Fruit Salad.
New School Fruit Salad is one of my absolute favorite ones because I also think it's fun and educational. I have a background as an elementary school teacher, and I remember telling my students that tomatoes and avocados were fruit and the astonishment on their faces at this revelation, for example. And then we have the watermelon, which is a classic fruit favorite. It was important for us to include the watermelon for a number of reasons. One, because it's delicious. Two, because we want to reclaim it and divorce it from negative stereotypes about Black food ways.
You tell us some African Americans will not eat watermelon because it had such stigma.
Absolutely. I think, and that is a sad, hard truth. And they certainly, I know personally Black people who will not eat watermelon in front of white people because they don't want to confirm any preconceptions or stereotypes.
You know, in the 19th century, there were horrible caricatures that were drawn and appeared in papers and magazines that use the slice of watermelon to look like a gaping Black grin. And this was an image that was used against African Americans to argue for our lack of humanity.
Well, and you write about another. Warning, it's very derogatory, but you say people make a casual reference to chicken as coon food.
They forget that the word coon comes from the phrase raccoon of Black people as chicken thieves, and they don't know how they can be inadvertently insulting Black people or putting salt in wounds that they have forgotten. The same way when they think of fruit, they don't think of the lynching tree and the phrase strange fruit. But for African Americans, older African Americans, we think of rural acres as very dangerous places, not necessarily pastoral spaces.
Right. Well, you mentioned, Alice, that part of your weight issue when you were growing up was that you loved the women in your family so much and wanted to be like them. And here you have this loving relationship with a daughter that is still around food, but in a different way. Talk about, for instance, your jugged pear recipe.
The jugged pear is a recipe that involves peeling pears, in our case, hundreds of them, and cooking them in a bath of herbs and spices and wine that's slightly sweetened, and slow cooking them on the stove. That's a recipe where Caroline and I have shared some of our biggest secrets, but it's also a dessert recipe that has no added fat to it. And it's just a wonderful celebrating of spending time together in the creation of the food, not just the cooking of the food. And the jug pear is something that we truly love.
Yeah. Well, and you're cooking just like grandmothers and great-grandmothers did before, you know, in back rooms behind closed doors.
Exactly. Yeah.
But way out in the open in this terrific new book. It's called Soul Food Love, Healthy Recipes Inspired by 100 Years of Cooking in a Black Family. Alice Randall, her daughter Caroline Randall Williams, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care.